Σώσον Κύριε των λαών Σου, ευλογήσον την κληρονομία Σου. Νίκας της βασιλεύσει κατά βαρβάρων δωρούμενος και τόσων φυλάτων δια του σταυρού σου πολιτεύμα. Save, O Lord, thy people and bless your inheritance. Grant thou unto the faithful victory over adversaries, and by the power of your cross do you preserve your commonwealth.
Yeah, but I would like to put another name on that stone. We have to put the name Agape.
Yes.
Because the theme of this year is going to be agape, how to love God. And that's why we're going to start today about some ideas on how we can get close to God, because as we said last week, we're not here just to learn about God, to learn about His teachings, but to learn how to love Him.
It is a huge topic because this topic encompasses God Himself. The Greek word for I love is a or he. Agape is love. I said I love. Agapo. Agapo starts with alpha and ends in omega, which is Christ Himself. The Alpha and the Omega. The Alpha and the Omega of our life is love, because God is love. If we don't love, we won't live. We will just exist. So we really learn how to truly love. And we will not be able to do that until we understand where love comes from. Love does not come from Hollywood or from the movies or from nice fictions about love that you read on airplanes. There's different kinds of love. But in order to understand the true love, the essential love, the love that passes and transcends all understanding, we have to understand where love comes from. As I said, love is the Alpha and the Omega. It's Christ Himself, because God is love. And it is great that today's gospel told us exactly that. And you see this in football fields all over the country. John 3:16. What is that verse that you see, Christina, that people write? A lot of the Protestants, they love this verse, and rightly so. For God so loved the world. That what did God do because He loved the world so much?
I think it was He gave it His only Son.
That's it, Costa. He loved us so much that He gave His only Son. We're all His sons according to grace. But Christ is the only Son according to essence. He's one of the Holy Trinity, who became man, came like one of us, and He sacrificed His only Son to save us. This is true love. The element of love that has a godly characteristic is the element of sacrifice. So God sacrificed for us to show us that it is also worth to sacrifice ourselves for the other person. But how do we see the love of God? How do we see that God is love in the universe? How do we see God's love in this world, Costa? What did God do to entice us? Did He do anything great for us, other than what we just said? Some other things.
Kind acts, like when people do nice things.
Okay. What did He create for us? Created light. God said there be light for us. God doesn't need light. He's already light. God is uncreated light, but He created this light for us. He created the whole universe for us. He could have just created a few stars, sun, moon, a few other. But what did he create? Billions of galaxies, billions of stars. See, God gives so much. So when we look up in the sky, we can glorify the presence of God just by looking in the sky. Many people come to faith just by looking in the sky. The heavens are displaying the glory of God. He also did something else great for us. He didn't create us like other animals, regardless of what they teach you in your schools, where science is trying to convince you that we come from the apes. I don't believe that for a second, because I've never seen an ape pick up a pen and write you a love note. Well, some apes will do that. Be careful.
Okay. I'm not talking about the apes, you know, in the jungles.
But he did all these things. He created this beautiful, awesome universe. He created us with gifts that belong to him. He gave us what belongs to him. He gave us his image. He created us not just like the animals who have no reason. God has reason. So he gave us a nous. God is nous. So he gave us a mind. God is free. So he gave us choice. Animals don't have a choice. So he created us according to his image. And he gave us all the potential to become just like him. And he did all this out of love. Not because he needed love. God does not need love. God needs nothing. Love is not the essence of God, but it's an energy of God. In other words, he loves us because he wants to. So he gave us freedom to choose him or reject him. We can reject God. He doesn't force us. This is the beauty of free will. You can tell God, I don't understand you. I'm not going to follow you. But you can't tell the devil that. You can only tell God that. Because when the devil enslaves you into passions, the passion of fornication, sex addiction, the passion of drug abuse, alcohol abuse, you cannot get away from these passions because the devil is a cruel master. But you can tell Christ at any time, Christ, I'm going to stop following you for a while. He's not going to punish you. He's not going to go after you. He's just going to sit there and, like a good father, wait for you to come home. So another thing that God did, since we didn't get it, since we fell in the garden, then he gave us commandments. The purpose of the commandments are to bring us back to health. By following the commandments are not some do's and don'ts that are going to enslave us, but they are there to protect us. Just like love, when God tells you, wait until your marriage, because you really need to enjoy this gift. To have the most enjoyment out of this gift needs to be protected. This fruit of love needs to blossom, and then it can be thoroughly enjoyed in a proper setting within marriage. This past weekend, I was going to Lancaster, where my mother lives, and I saw that they had these nets around these grapevines. They are towards 222. They had, why would they put nets around these poor grapes? Any idea?
Like insects and stuff.
I have a vineyard outside of my house. And the minute these grapes come and begin to get a little red, these blackbirds come, and they don't just come in one or two. They notify, they text to the rest of their friends in the whole area. They come, and within days, these grapes are gone. So in the same way, our church puts a little net around this gift called love, to protect it for you, so you can have it and enjoy it fully within the setting of marriage, within the blessing of marriage. But if we spend it and we allow all these birds to take it from us, then we won't have much available during the time of our marriage. So everything God is teaching us is how to develop us to become like the people that we're supposed to be, the way he created us in paradise. So the purpose of the commandments are the therapeutic method that brings us back to health. Because after the fall, we became anorexic. You know what happens when a person is anorexic? They don't like to eat. So in the same way, after the fall, we became anorexic of the things of God. We have this anorexia, akidia in Greek, spiritual anorexia. So we can do all kinds of things. We can text, speak to our friends, love everything in this life except the things of God. We find them a little bit difficult because of this spiritual anorexia.
And this is what we're here to correct in our church. This anorexia is corrected by following the commandments. So sin is any action that does not allow us to love God with all our existence. What sin does, it somehow gives us this anorexia. It's like a little poison, and it anesthetizes us. It enslaves us. Sin is enslaving. And repentance is a life that turns us towards God. So we come to church not to simply believe or to learn about God or to know about the scriptures. We come to church to learn how to love God. And Christ taught us that the one who loves me is the one who keeps my commandments. So the commandments are the vitamins that are going to make us healthy spiritually. So we love God because he first loved us, because he created us out of love and according to his image. And he became man so we can see him, because he's a person. God is personal. The cross is a person. I had a question last night, some seminarian from Holy Cross. She had this question. Now, why do we address the cross as a person? Why do we have an acathist to the cross? And we ask, cross, please help us, sanctify us, give us your power. The cross is just a piece of wood. That was her question. It's a very legitimate question. And the theology of our church teaches us that, yes, this was a tree. But after this tree was drenched, for those of you who saw the Passion of Christ, you saw the blood pouring down from Christ's body. This cross was drenched by the very blood of Christ. And this blood of Christ is now on all those pieces of the Holy Cross that are scattered all over the universe. And that blood of Christ gives these pieces of the cross awesome powers. And that cross of Christ is all over the universe protecting us. Protect us, Saint Nectarios. When the captain of the ship didn't want to put him on a boat, he wanted to go to Alexandria, I believe, to study. St. Nectarius, little boy, Anastasios, didn't have any money, was broke, couldn't pay the ticket. So he had the Holy Cross on him, and he had a piece of the Holy Cross inside this cross that he was wearing. His yaya gave him this cross, this treasure. Had a real piece of the cross of Christ. So because the captain wanted to leave him outside, the engine of the boat would not start. They tried everything possible. The engine would not start. So the captain looked over to this boy who was looking outside with tears. He wouldn't let him in without a ticket. And God illumined him and said, bring that boy on the boat. The minute they brought him on a boat, the engine started. Halfway through the sea, there was such a tempest. The sea was so rough that the boat was ready to capsize. The sailors began to lose hope. And little Anastasios takes the cross with the real piece of Christ in it, ties it on a string, lowers it in the sea. And the minute the cross touched the sea, just like was Christ himself walking on it, the sea became as calm as oil. Saved the lives of every person on that boat, including St. Nectarius. But there was a little temptation. He didn't tie it properly. He was just a little boy, and the cross was lost. And now he was very upset because this was a yaya's heirloom. So he was in tears, and at the end of the voyage, they heard this noise knocking under the engine, under the boat. And they went underneath, they searched the boat, and they saw a ray of the sun reflecting this object, which was the cross that was stuck on the rudder. The cross with the real pieces of Christ never vanishes. It never sinks, as the power of Christ on it. We have two crosses in Crete that are so miraculous that when the priest touches you with them, they stick on your skin if there's any kind of an ailment. Extreme healing powers. Out of the one cross, about 600 births from women who couldn't have children. That's why in Crete you have Stavros, Stavros, Stavros. Every other boy Stavros, because the women were able to have children because of this cross of Christ. So the sacrificial love of God is shown to us through the cross. Any questions before I continue my... Yes, Kyriako?
No.
I don't want this to be a monologue. Oh, by the way, we have two books of the Revelation here. I forgot to tell you. Some of you wanted to study Revelation. We're not going to cover it in this class at length. We have three volumes, and I'm going to let them right here on the shelves of the library, so any of you who are interested, you can read them at some point.
So, Sagapo,
I love you, starts with an Alpha and the Omega. Without the love of God, we will not have the ability to truly love men, or our parents, or our children, or our future husband or wife, because the filter that really filters the oxidants out of human love is the love of God. That's why the first commandment is not. What's the first commandment? Christina? Filothe? Anastasia? What is the out of the Ten Commandments? Which one's the first? Nico? Kiriako? Constantine? The one who's yawning? Yes?
Love one another.
Very good. Anybody else? You know, 90% of the people would say that love the other person as yourself. That's the number one commandment. Go ahead, Filothe. Okay, good. So what is the first commandment? Costa. Take a guess.
Do not lie?
Of course, that's up there. 6 or 7, I believe. Yeah. Do not covet. That's number 10.
I'm pretty sure it's to love God.
That's it. Very good, Costandina. The number one commandment and the most important commandment is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your strength. In other words, love God with all your existence. So the first commandment is first because it is the most important one. And if we exercise that commandment, then everything else will fall into place. So Christ says the entire law of Moses can stand on these two commandments. Love God and love your fellow man. But if we don't love God, we will not be able to properly love the other person. Because the love of God is going to teach us how to truly love the other person. Because there are many different loves in this world. There is egotistical love. People are going to love us because of what we give them. People are going to love us because of what they get from us. People are going to love us because we serve them. This is all unhealthy, egotistical love, immature love, human love. And when we enter marriage with this kind of love that seeks its own, in other words, I'm in this marriage to see what I can get from myself. What's in it for me? This is a very sick, unhealthy love that destroys today's marriages. Where if we enter marriage with a sacrificial love, a love that is God-like, then I am here to see what I can do for you, how it can help you, how can I improve your day in any way. It is a love of service, of giving ourselves to the other person. It is a pure love. It is a love that does not seek its own. And these are the characteristics of the love of God. It is not jealous. Jealousy is not love. If you're jealous of the other person, you're insecure, you're selfish, you're choking the other person. If you're controlling, you don't know how to love. Does God control us? Does he tell you, I don't want you to study this topic and that topic? Does God tell you, I want you to go to this school, that school? No. He gives us perfect freedom because love is cultivated in freedom. And your parents cannot tell you who to marry. Philothea, isn't that good? They can suggest. In the past, they did. They had those arranged marriages. And they worked, surprisingly enough. Sometimes. Out of many reasons, right? Sometimes. But we are free to say yes or no. So love is free. The love of God is free. It's not controlling. It's not jealous. Does not seek its own. It forgives everything. And that's why it never fails. Human love is usually egotistical, and that's why it fails. So how do we love correctly? We don't know how. The way we're going to learn how to love is by following the commandments of God. When we purify our heart, then we'll purely love, and we'll also learn how to love unconditionally. Another aspect of God's love, it's unconditional, Christina. In other words, even if we sin, God still loves us. Even if we crucify him, he still loves us. God's love does not fluctuate. I'm going to surprise you. God does not love the Panagia any more than he loves the devil. Do you want me to repeat that? God loves the devil as one of his creatures with the same fervor as he loves the Panagia, the most holy person that ever lived. Because God's love does not fluctuate, regardless of what we do. So don't ever let the devil whisper to you, "Oh, you did this sin. Now God doesn't love you anymore. God cannot forgive you. This is a lie of the evil one." No matter what we do, God is there to forgive us. But we have to ask him, because he will not force us. He gave us freedom.
So God's love is unconditional, unfading, forever. God does not stop loving those who go to hell. He continues to love them, but they do not have the frequency of love in their system. In order to have internet access, you got to have that key, that frequency. And the frequency that we commune with God is love. That's the frequency. So this is how we commune with love from this life. That's why if we don't love God from this life, we cannot love him in the other life. We don't have that possibility. God will always love us regardless. God loves those in hell, but they don't have the frequency or the ability to commune with him. So why do we come to Sunday school? To learn how to love God, to learn about him, and to see him. We can see God every day, not just in our icons. That's why Christ became man, so we can see him, touch him, feel him. But we see him. We see his protection. We see his providence on a daily basis. If God would allow the demons and the devil, even for a few minutes, they could have destroyed the whole planet in a minute. But God is in charge of this history. So God is always with us. Always with us. So he loves us unconditionally. However, he cannot save us without our will, because of the freedom. He gave us freedom. So we need to ask him to forgive our sins, and he will do so. No matter what kind of sin we do. I'm not suggesting for us to go sin, because once again, when we sin, we become very unhappy. We become guilty. We have psychological problems. We lose our joy. Sin is a poison. Initially, it may seem like it's a good thing, a sweet taste, but then it becomes bitter because sin is enslaving, addictive. For the love of God sets us free. We become free people, people of freedom. Questions? It's almost 10:30. How many go to the second liturgy? This is some hands?
Sometimes.
A couple of you. Okay.
Yes. If we have any questions, we'll just have 1 minute for...
The many questions will come with the topic of the Marys and of the relationships with the Zalatas. There is the big conversation about...
Yeah. I just have one question. Like, 9/11 recently passed. How do you make sense of that?
We sometimes get influenced by other religions or faiths where they believe that people who are faithful and follow God are rewarded and have a good life. But that is a misconception, because Christ himself told his disciples that you will be persecuted and you will lead a very difficult life. People will hate you and people will make you suffer. So he professed this to his own disciples. He told his disciples they would suffer in this life. And despite that, he had so many followers and so many martyrs gave their blood for him. So in our faith, suffering and pain is not a punishment, but actually we see it as a proof of our love to God. It's we give evidence that we love him, because we cannot prove our love to God without sacrifices. And of course, those who suffer for God have a lot more reward than anyone else. But I just wanted to just point that out about pain in life.
And pain and suffering is very therapeutic after the fall. After the fall, because again, it's a fallen world, then because Christ showed us the way. He died through crucifixion, and we're going to be also crucified, but God will always be with us. And through the suffering, we will be glorifying God. Yeah.
And with matters like this, we see how bad the world would be without Christianity. have so much more of that.
You know, Anastasia, in the first 3 centuries, 11 million Christians died. They gave their blood for Christ. And the strongest characteristic of the group of Christians that changed the whole world in the first 3 centuries was the heathen and the Gentiles were saying, look how they love each other. They hardly even know each other, but they love each other. So it's really the love of God that goes above and beyond death. When you love God, death doesn't matter because Christ defeated death by death.
And I'm sure that the other Pope Paul's families that suffered after 9/11,
yeah.
I think that he would take personal care of his family. I'm sure he did that. I mean,
yeah.
These people, these families that suffer losing a person, I'm sure that God watches them closely now.
You know, there was a monk who just passed, this monk Moses in Mount Athos, who was very ill. He had a transplant of a liver, and he said, from the time I was 13 years old, I just realized that God is discovered in pain. The more pain we have, the closer we're drawn to God, because we become like Christ. Look how much pain the Panagia had and how much pain Christ had in his life. His life was nothing but pain. He was constantly persecuted for 3 years. He was chased around by his own people, the Pharisees, the Sadducees, trying to judge him, criticize him, kill him. So that's what a Christian is, one who's not afraid to die for Christ if necessary.